So, welcome to the Gulf Report's first and very first podcast ever. And I'm Kieran McGonigal, and with me I've got my brother Owen McGonigal.
How's it going?
You can follow us both on Twitter at Kieran McGonigal or at Owen McGonigal. And the title of the podcast, I guess, is the Gulf Report Premier League Preview 2011-2012. We'll try and stick to the same facts or opinions as I posted in my blog this week. Mark Lawrenson must be stopped, but of course I won't hold on to any of that.
No, definitely not.
So, let's try and keep it topical, and we're going to try and wind this up quicker than the ongoing transfer saga at Arsenal, because Soccer Saturday is on as we speak, and I want to steal some of Jeff Stelling's jokes for the next installment of this. So, Fabregas to Barcelona, looking like it's finally a done deal. Despite comical Arsene's ramblings at the press conference yesterday, you didn't hear any of that?
No, well, I was reading this morning the paper. He was still maintaining he didn't expect any departures from the club, which is, well, either completely delusional or he's just lost the club altogether. I mean, it's been pretty obvious for as long as I can remember Fabregas is going to go. It seems that he finally is leaving, and it really just needs to be put to bed at this stage for the good of Arsenal and for, you know, just to get on with signing a new player to replace him.
Yeah, I said towards the end of last season, I felt that, I mean, are Arsenal terribly worse off in the Premier League anyway with Jack Wilshere and Aaron Ramsey versus, you know, Cesc Fabregas on his own, a player who has been injured quite a lot in the past couple of seasons and whose motivation to stay at Arsenal really, I think, has to be questioned. And I don't really blame the player. I mean, you know, the Arsenal haven't been serious contenders now for a couple of years, and so I can understand the desire to go to the best club football team in the world, even if it's questionable how much he'll actually play on that team in the near term anyway. But it's a long season in Spain when you're contending on so many fronts, so I'm sure he will get the opportunities. But I think Arsenal probably have to move and move pretty quickly to quell the growing disquiet among their fans, you know, and sign a big name. But time is running out.
Yeah, well, very much so. I mean, it seems if reports are true that Wenger kind of promised Fabregas that he would be allowed to move to Barcelona, you know, at the end of two seasons ago, basically. You know, he asked Fabregas to maybe stay and for one last push towards silverware or certainly a title challenge. That didn't materialise last year, and you could argue, I mean, Fabregas certainly was injured a lot, but, you know, you could argue that's a lack of motivation on his part. I mean, why should he kind of, you know, carry the team on his shoulders basically by himself when he could move to somewhere like Barcelona, be involved in challenging for Champions League titles basically every season, you know? So I think definitely the best thing at this stage is to certainly sell him on. He clearly wants to go. Clearly Barcelona are willing to pay serious money for him. You know, obviously money isn't really an issue for Arsenal. They clearly have plenty. What I would be worried about from Arsenal's point of view, certainly they do have people like Wilshere, Ramsey are excellent midfield players, but again it comes back to the point that we need some established, experienced players who have won serious competitions before. If you are going to challenge like Man United, even Chelsea for a title challenge, you know?
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, when Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry, you know, to a lesser extent, Dennis Bergkamp and Mark Overmars arrived at Arsenal, I mean, they wouldn't have been terribly successful footballers from the point of view of winning trophies, I think, but they certainly had quality. I mean, I wonder, Gervinho, as I can recall from the last World Cup, looked a pretty good player, and in highlights of a friendly recently, he looked very good, but you know, is he the type of player they really need, or is he a big enough name? And Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who all his experience to date has been at a League One club, so how that translates into the Premier League will be interesting to see. They obviously have this Japanese teenage starter who they're fighting to get a work permit for at the moment. You know, so he will be available this year. But you know, the consensus seems to be they need at least one centre back. With Thomas Vermaelen's injury problems, I wonder if they even need two. I mean, the name's been thrown around, Scott Dan, Christopher Samba, Phil Jagielka. none of them to me seem like Wenger signings. You know, they're all English, all playing in the Premier League, or could command hefty enough transfer fees. And how again their form translates into playing for a contender like Arsenal versus also around the relegation candidates like Blackburn, Birmingham, or the table scrappers like Everton remains to be seen. But I think, you know, I think this will be a key season for Arsenal, because I think there is a severe danger they will fall out of the top four this year. And once that happens, you know, revenue starts to fall pretty dramatically if you're not playing in the Champions League. So with this whole thing about, financial conservatism and having a strong P&L and balance sheet by not spending unwisely on large transfer fees, it almost turns into cutting off your nose to spite your face if you're not going to be making the Champions League.
Yeah, certainly. But, I mean, the notion that clearly he's willing to spend money at certain points. I mean, to spend £15 million on a young player who's never played outside effectively the third tier of English football is a strange decision when you're willing to spend the same amount on an experienced defender, the likes of a Jagielka or even a Samba, you know. You know, they may not be world class, you know, in that sense of things, but certainly that they're good defenders. They would add stability to the Arsenal backline. They might be able to defend set pieces a whole lot better, which was their Achilles heel so many times last season. You know, effectively at times last year, Vermaelen was their only defender of any serious quality, and he was injured so often that they were effectively rendered without any leadership at the back, especially with a young keeper in. That might be another area Arsenal need to strengthen in the immediate future to challenge seriously. So, I mean, I think he needs to make certainly a signing at the back as a matter of urgency, you know. He's given no indication that he's going to do that, so I would definitely agree that if they don't shore up their back line, they're in severe danger of missing out on a Champions League place.
Yeah, I mean, they face a very important tie against Udinese this week, and all indications are they will not have Fabregas nor Nasri for that tie, and indeed Jack Wilshere could be injured too. So, I mean, I know Udinese mightn't be the same power as they were last season, but and I mean, Italian football, I think generally outside the top two and even within the top two or three, the quality maybe isn't as it was in previous seasons. But I think that is a very, very important game for Arsenal and could go along with defining the rest of their season. Now, not to spend too long on Arsenal, but I mean, if I look at the type of players they need, and you know, again, this isn't Wenger style to sign within the Premier League, but I mean, I look at Newcastle, and you know, I certainly think Joey Barton is probably available. I know most Arsenal fans might turn their nose up at him, but he strikes me as you know exactly the sort of player Arsenal need, and maybe even to a lesser extent, Cech Tiote, who would certainly put a bit of fight into their midfield. And I'm sure he'd be picked up for a reasonable enough price in the bargain basement here at Newcastle.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I think really if you're talking about this season of the Premier League, you look at last season's table, you look at how last season finished with Man United on top, Chelsea, etc. And you look at what's changed in teams since last year. I mean, Man United, you could argue, have strengthened their side. I mean, they've lost Scholes, they've lost Van der Sar. De Gea, and that's obviously, he's very young, made, you know, a mistake perhaps in the community sheeting, but you know, his makings of a very good keeper. They spent big money. Ferguson's not afraid to spend big money where he feels it will strengthen his team. Signing Ashley Young, for example, you know, paid a lot of money for him. But again, he fits into United's style of play, very quick, very direct, will cross good balls into the box. It's a signing with a plan, you know. So you could argue Man United certainly haven't diminished since last year. And then you look at teams like Chelsea. I mean, what has changed at Chelsea since this time last year? Obviously, the manager is the main one, but the playing staff primarily is the same. And you'd wonder just if Chelsea and teams are going to remain stationary, have they any hope of catching Man United or even pushing them closer for the title?
No, I agree, certainly. I think the type of signings we've seen Chelsea make have been strange. We have a young guy from Barcelona who, you know, they may he may turn out to be a good player, but if he does turn out to be a good player, Barcelona have the option to buy him back, not just next season, but the season after as well. And you know, then we have a young goalkeeper who's been loaned out straight away, and I mean, who, you know, isn't really going to get a chance without you know, a chance with Peter Cech there in the immediate future, you'd imagine. And then obviously we have Lukaku, who looks like being wrapped up you know, in the next few days. But with Torres, Drogba, Sturridge, and I guess Anelka ahead of him, where does he fit into the plan? I mean, he's obviously a young player, and you know, there's plenty of upside there for the years ahead. But they haven't made the kind of signing of a creative force in the middle of the field that they seem to lack at so many times last year. I don't know whether a deal will get done for Modric. I wouldn't be surprised, in fact, at this point, given that Schneider to United doesn't look like it's going to happen, if United come in and make a bid. And I would almost suspect that you know, Modric could end up at Manchester United. Now, he does seem to have a desire to play at Chelsea, but you know, I think if United come in, I think maybe even Spurs would be more willing to sell him to United than their capital rivals. The indications are the team that starts at Stoke tomorrow will be largely the same team as Carlo Ancelotti deployed in the final games of last season. And you know, I've written a piece for the Life's a Pitch blog that hopefully will be published in the next day or two, where I just wonder, you know, what will be different. Carlo Ancelotti, by all accounts, was well respected by the players, had a lot of respect in the media, was an extraordinary, well, not extraordinarily successful, certainly a very successful manager, and yet seemed to inspire very little confidence in the team when it really matters.
Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness to Chelsea, I mean, I think people forget how close Chelsea came to actually winning the league last year. You can see they made an unbelievable start to the campaign, and then there was the pretty much ridiculous time kind of midway through the season where they couldn't buy a win or even oftentimes a point. And despite that, I mean, in a better league, Chelsea would have been well out of the race coming into the home stretch. But the fact was, they went to Old Trafford last year, and if they'd won that game, they pretty much would have won the league. Now, the fact that they played pretty horribly that day and they beat them fairly easily shouldn't take away from the fact that Chelsea were still very much in with a shout, even considering how unimpressive they played for large parts of the season last year. I was reading this morning in the Irish Times that, you know, the writer's making the argument that if players like Lampard, who had a pretty poor season last year, Lampard, Drogba, people like that, if they can find their best form again, then the Chelsea really would be, it could be argued, could be favourites for the league. Now, there's no indication last year that Lampard was ever going to find good form again. I mean, he was very, very poor for large parts of the season. But in fairness, I mean, if Villas Boas, who clearly has had good effects on teams he's managed in the past, can inspire these players to, if you want, one last charge, then, you know, Chelsea will certainly be there or thereabouts again. But I think that is the key question, is can this aging team really find it to gear themselves up for another challenge?
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as an exceptional motivator, which I think is what Chelsea need. Having said that, I mean, some of the tactics employed by Chelsea last year were extremely naive. I think back to the home game against Aston Villa, where they ended up drawing 4-4, and you know, after, you know, taking the lead so late in the game to see an equaliser in the fashion they did, you know, was unbelievable. I don't think it would have ever happened under the original and best Special One. You know, so I wonder. Hey, look, I'm happy to give them time. I hope I'm wrong about them. I mean, I do think back to the Europa League final we attended, and I was very unimpressed with what I saw from Porto that night in terms of their attacking play. I mean, they clearly had the better players, the bigger names, and they seemed to play almost within themselves and let what looked like a very average Braga team, you know, back into the game in the second half. And I mean, I guess finals are rarely good games, but I mean, another way of looking at it, Porto were comfortable winners, even though they only won 1-0. But I just worry that that's what we could see from Chelsea again this season. And you know, again, I think they need, you know, I think Michael Essien is a big loss, and it'll be interesting to see how much game time Josh McCaffrey gets. He certainly looks a very good player. I'm keen to see Danny Sturridge play more, but I mean, the big question is the $50 million elephant in the corner, that is Fernando Torres, and what he can offer. And you know, preseason form wouldn't appear to be that encouraging.
Oh, but again, are they playing football to suit Torres? I mean, obviously you can't really build your whole side around one man, but I mean, you consider when Torres was at his very best, I mean, he needs a certain type of service, which are good through balls. I mean, hence the pursuit of Modric, I guess, and that's exactly what Modric would supply. Now, if they get Modric, then, you know, happy days. If they don't, can they adapt to play Torres in more often in the ways that Torres wants? I mean, there's no doubt that Torres certainly was in fairly shocking form after his transfer. His confidence was pretty much shot. And it's very difficult to recover that without kind of going on a good run. And it just so happened that his decline kind of coincided with Chelsea's bad run form. So, you know, which came first, basically, like, you know. I still think Torres, I mean, I've heard talk that, oh, Torres was overrated, this and that, and I still think Torres is one of the finest centre forwards I've seen play in recent years. I mean, people forget at Liverpool, I mean, he was nigh on unplayable. I mean, certainly famously he destroyed Nemanja Vidic, you know, many times, who was recognised as maybe the best defender in the league. And that wasn't a fluke, you know, and I think certainly that is the big question. Can he rediscover his form? And can Chelsea and Villas Boas maybe come to some arrangement where they can play football to make best use of Torres? Because I think that would be a huge, huge asset in terms of pushing for the title.
Yeah, and I mean, I think at some point as well, you know, I'm not looking for attractive football for the sake of attractive football, but if we look at the current European champions and the dominant team in Europe, the brand of football Barcelona play, it's not only fantastic to watch at times, but it can be very effective. And I think it's about striking a balance. And Chelsea just for too long have been functional, and that was fine when, you know, results were there and there were victories. But even at the start of last season, I remained to be convinced by them, and I wasn't surprised that the run of form took place mid-year, because I think the indications were there it was coming. Anyway, let's not dwell on events at Stamford Bridge for too much longer. If we move to the northwest and to Manchester, the blue half of the city, I think this could be the team that pushes United this season. But I mean, I know it was only basically a pre-season friendly, but worrying signs in the Community Shield last weekend.
Well, it's I mean, there's no doubt their squad is formidable, to say the least. Obviously, when money is no object, you can strengthen at will, and they have done so. Aguero is an excellent signing, big money, but I think potentially he could be one of the stars of the Premier League this year. The ongoing Tevez situation is obviously a distraction. I mean, will he, won't he be there, you know, in 3 or 4 months' time? It seems unlikely. But the sense about Man City, while certainly I think they will be a formidable team this year and definitely will mount a title challenge, they somehow still seem less than the sum of their parts as a team. Obviously, Community Shield was what it was, a glorified friendly. I mean, they didn't play particularly well to go 2-0 ahead, but I think the manner in which they surrendered the game, and obviously the third goal they gave away was comical. But even last season, at times they flattered to deceive, and Mancini's tactics, given especially the striking power at his disposal, are oftentimes too negative, I think, to bring the best out of the team he has.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the potential loss of Tevez can't be, you know, overstated. I mean, he was their key man last year. Okay, you had company at the back, and you had De Jong and Touré in the middle of the field, but in terms of goal-scoring ability and creative flair, Tevez was the man. So losing him leaves a huge hole in that side. Balotelli has issues. I think he looks a very talented player and could be fantastic, but I just don't know how much the manager trusts him or how long he will be around. I think Dzeko. I don't know what to think of Dzeko, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, I'm just watching the goal he scored last weekend. I mean, it was a shot hit from distance, and you know, he kind of got lucky. But he does not look the real deal. I mean, maybe they don't play like with the likes of Adam Johnson enough to put in the kind of ball that he thrives on. He looks like a more traditional centre forward.
He seems strangely like a lumbering kind of player. I mean, the Premier League, the speed of the game is exceptionally fast. And I don't know if he really can play at a sufficient speed to adapt to it. Obviously, he scored so many goals in the Bundesliga without many people, I guess, having seen him play to any great extent, that he came with quite a big reputation. You know, maybe given a proper run in the team, and if the team is going well, he might really start going at a good rate. Remains to be seen. Obviously, Balotelli, his talent is unquestioned. I've seen him play quite often in Serie A. But I mean, he has serious issues of discipline and having his head screwed on, basically. I don't know at this stage whether the relationship between himself and Mancini, whether, you know, Mancini is the man to settle him down effectively. I don't know really who would be able to do that. Which is a pity, because if they could kind of harness his potential effectively, he would be a wonderful, wonderful player, you know. Again, that's a big question for Mancini, but I think I agree completely that Tevez was the heart and soul of that Man City team in terms of goals, assists, his work rates. He was a talisman for them, and I don't know if losing him is a blow that, you know, they could withstand in terms of mounting a real title challenge. I think he would, if they could hold on to him, have himself, Aguero, and the team going well. Obviously, as you mentioned, people like Kompany, Yaya Toure playing as they played last season, then they would be a pretty serious contender for the title.
Yeah, and Nasri?
Nasri, yeah, I mean, he's certainly a very good player. Like he played well at Arsenal last year when Arsenal themselves weren't going particularly well. I don't know if they need him or if he's really what would make a big difference to them. They have Adam Johnson, I think, plays well for Man City every time he plays. I think David Silva is a superior player to Nasri. I think, you know, if you're looking for a room creatively, you look no further than him. What I think Man City really lack is maybe a kind of a sitting midfield player who can pass the ball. I mean, if they could, a Xabi Alonso type player would be just exactly what they need. I would feel Nasri is kind of plays further forwards, a wide player, maybe a bit more dynamic in that sense. But I think he's effectively buying Nasri something he already has. Whereas, you know, there might be other areas where he could have purchased that would have really rounded out his squad properly. Having said that, I mean, Nasri is no bad player to have, definitely not. And as I say, if you have the money, why not go for him and strengthen your squad even further, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly are collecting a lot of very, very good players. But I suppose, as Real Madrid illustrated last year, you know, collecting good players isn't the same as having a good team necessarily. And I mean, they fell well short of the Barcelona challenge last year, I think. And I can probably see a similar scenario this season. I think worrying signs last weekend, again, even though it was an exhibition game, what made City strong last season was their organization and their defense, and that clearly was lacking last weekend. So, I mean, you know, unless that improves very quickly, I think, you know, they could struggle early on to assimilate some of the newer players as well. I mean, I don't think Aguero will be the instant hit people are saying, and you know, obviously the Nasri deal isn't done yet. So, I mean, I think that it's Manchester United to lose again this year. I think they've signed pretty well. I mean, I think, okay, they have to replace Van der Sar. That was questionable. They've bought a young keeper who has huge potential. I think, I mean, you know, there was a lot of focus on him last weekend, and you know, people saying the next Taibbi and so on. I think that, you know, I think that's probably a bit harsh. I think we're all wishing the worst for him. But, you know, I think realistically, I think he probably will be good. I think he'll certainly probably have some moments this season. But I just can't see him being bad enough to cost United the title.
Yeah.
Phil Jones, again, I think looks one for the future. I think he looks a very good player. He's very versatile. Whether he gives you much more than John O'Shea in that team, I'm not sure. I think he probably has a better player than John O'Shea. But, you know, I think it's a wash as to do them. Ashley Young, yep, very good player. Can't argue with that signing. But they probably haven't. I think they're certainly good enough to win the Premier League and perhaps even win it comfortably when all is said and done. You know, we won't go into, I think, you know, Europe too much at the moment because there's plenty of time for that. But, you know, whether they have the quality in the middle of the field to challenge Barcelona, I don't know. Tom Cleverley, I think, looks a very interesting prospect. And, you know, he could be the guy to take over from Paul Scholes. You know, I don't think he's the same type of player as Scholes. He probably isn't the same passing range. But certainly last weekend he looked very good.
Yeah, he definitely did. Yeah, I agree. Like the central midfield is an area where, you know, United might be at their weakest, if you will. I mean, Michael Carrick, it's kind of well documented. A lot of people don't really rate him. A lot of even my United fans don't really rate him as being good enough for that team or even that you know Champions League level, you know. He has ability, but you know, anytime he's put under pressure, he tends to get very poor. But in fairness to United, they kind of adapt. I think they do it better than any other team. They adapt their tactics and they play to their strengths, and their strengths have always been the speed of their game. They move the ball very, very fast from front to back. And they're one of the few teams with genuine width. Obviously saying Ashley Young will only accentuate that, but they have genuine width, which a lot of teams are missing, and it gives you great options, especially in the era of 10 men behind the ball, etc., to go around teams and go down the line and fire in great crosses is probably and still remains the best way to score goals. And I think that's what United do. I mean, they have a very defined game plan, of high intensity, high pace, and direct, which I think a lot of teams could learn from. Obviously, your Arsenals are a case in point, and other teams in general. I mean, the best way to play is still to try and score goals. And I think, in fairness to United, they do that better than anyone else still. I still think they'll probably do it better than anyone else this season. You know, if Rooney can recapture the form he showed for parts of last season, he was back to being certainly one of the finest players in England again. And, you know, he's very, very hard to stop when he's going like that. So, yeah, definitely, I still think United are a team to beat. Their experience, you know, Ferguson is the preeminent manager in the league. And, you know, everyone else has to step up to the mark and try and push them. They were there for the taking last year. They, by their own standards, they didn't play very well. I mean, I think they won one of the lowest points total for a number of years. But the fact of the matter was that no one else was good enough or consistent enough to challenge them. And I think that remains to be seen whether anyone can mount a sustained enough title challenge to put United under serious pressure at the top. As Chelsea did for parts of last season, but again, Chelsea blinked first effectively last year. So whether anyone can really push United as hard as they can, I think will be a big question. But you know, United won't beat themselves basically, which I think is the key point. So it's up to other teams to really step up.
Yeah, I think United hung in there last year and ultimately, you know, won the title fairly comfortably. And I think they will probably hit the ground running better this season. All indications are that Rooney's had an excellent preseason. Obviously, Hernandez came into his own towards the end of last season, and I mean, it's frightening to think about how many goals he can score this season now. He starts off concussed, which is not good for United, I guess, but you have to remember that you've got Danny Welbeck back at Manchester United now, and you know, he showed last season that he could probably be a valuable addition. So, yeah, I mean, I think we've have three out of the top four at this point. I mean, I think it'll be myself, I think it'll be United, City, and possibly Chelsea. And then for fourth place, I have my doubts about Arsenal. So if we look at Liverpool, what are your thoughts on what Liverpool have done this summer, what they might do?
Well, they've certainly spent big, upwards of 60 million at this stage or something. you know, the signings have been forbidden money. I'm not altogether sure about the overall quality of them. You know, Stuart Downing is a good player, and I think if you're going to play Andy Carroll on the team, he's a good signing. He will do what Andy Carroll needs. He will supply good quality ball, good crosses. I mean, and Andy Carroll is probably the best header of the ball in the league. So that's a good move for them. Jordan Henderson, 20 million, I don't know. He was pretty good for Sunderland last year. Didn't look very good for England in the Under 21 Championship, but then England themselves didn't look too good. I just don't know. They've signed a lot of players in the same position. I mean, I think at this stage they have, is it 8 central midfield players effectively? So it's very hard to know what their team is going to shape up like. If you assume Suarez, who's just a wonderful player, and Carroll up front, then you're left with, I mean, who's going to go out of the team? Gerrard, if he's fit, will play, you'd imagine. Coyte, I think, has been a very good player for Liverpool. I'd be, if I was a Liverpool fan, I wouldn't want to see him out of the team. Lucas Leiva, who, you know, for many years was kind of slated as not a very good player, was actually quite impressive last season. So then you're wondering, you know, does Charlie Adam fit in that team? Does Henderson fit in that team? I mean, I would imagine Henderson won't play all that often, which seems strange given they paid £20 million for him. But I think where Liverpool really needed to strengthen was at the back. They've signed Enrique from Newcastle, who's a good left back, but I think Liverpool needed a centre half, given the injury problems that Sturridge and Agger tend to have. Carragher, I think, is past his best and has been for a year and a half at this stage. Glenn Johnson, quite a pretty good footballer, is not a very good defender at right back. So I really think they needed a good centre half, which would have strengthened them considerably. But I don't think they've signed enough to really. I would still fancy Arsenal to pick them for a fourth place, I think.
Okay. I mean, they are still being linked with Scott Dan, and I think as well there was a story today that they had an offer turned out for Ryan Shawcross. Also, I suppose it's worth keeping in mind that Martin Kelly, who played right back for some games last season, is in fact a centre back. So, I mean, he looked like quite a good footballer whenever he played last season. So there's the potential to move him into the centre as well. So, no, in general, I agree. I mean, you know, I was having a back and forth with another Chelsea fan on Twitter the other night and saying, well, look what Liverpool have done. And he said, well, how many of them would you see in the Chelsea team? And I said, good point. Probably, you know, I probably have Downing and that's about it. But they still have strength in their squad. I don't think there's any argument about that. Yeah. I think they got a bounce from Dalglish last season, and I think they might just find it hard. I mean, Liverpool tend to start poorly, and that's what kind of dooms them. They start poorly, and they're almost out of the running by Christmas time, and then they come back and generally move up the league later in the season. Last season, they obviously got a bounce from Dalglish, but they finished the season, you know, not in great form. So I think big expectations there, but not too much confidence. I mean, I haven't heard anyone tipping them to win the league. So, I mean, you know, expectations are probably at a reasonable level there. So it'll be very interesting to see how they do. The other team, I guess, we have to throw into the mix for fourth spot is Spurs.
Mm. Yeah, well, Spurs obviously, you know, have been there in recent years. Obviously, they did reasonably well in the Champions League last season. I guess a lot of the fact they've held on to Van der Vaart, who started last season so well, he kind of petered out towards the end, but as did Spurs in general. The Modric thing is a big one for Spurs. Obviously, it'll say a lot about Spurs and where they see themselves. Are they a serious club? If they were to lose Modric, then you'd have to say then they're not one of the big clubs, that Chelsea is still, you know, the place where these kind of players want to play. I don't know if the Spurs have strengthened sufficiently. I mean, they missed out on Champions League. And I don't know. I think Liverpool are probably stronger than them this year. And as I say, I still think Arsenal will have just about enough to sweep fourth spot. So I would see that leaving Spurs maybe coming in sixth. That's the way I would see it at the moment anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Spurs were to finish above Arsenal, that would really be a catastrophe for the Arsenal. I mean, they've been pretty quiet in the transfer market, which is unusual for a Harry Redknapp team. But of course, deadline day is where he does most of his wheeling and dealing. I think Friedel is probably a good signing, a bit more consistency than the somewhat erratic Gomes. But he is an old guy, so what he has left in the tank remains to be seen. I'm afraid I don't know anything about Ceballos, the midfielder they signed, but I mean, I do know that certainly a guy who's come into his own last season was Sandro, even if Harry Redknapp doesn't seem to want him crossing the halfway line. You know, obviously Bale, you know, footballer of the year last year on very little evidence, but looks a very good player. I think they have Kyle Walker back this season, who looked very good for Aston Villa last year, and he looked one of England's better players at the under-21s. So he's almost like a new signing, but they need to figure out what they're doing up front. Ireland's greatest ever striker looks like he could be off to LA, even though I question whether anyone from Hull will get a visa to work in the US. You know, their most effective striker by stats last year, believe it or not, was Pavlyuchenko. Yet, you know, Defoe Crouch seems to be the preferred partnership. There are constant rumors that Crouch could be on his way out, but they don't seem to be linked with too many players. I mean, the decision was it 2 years ago at this point to sell Darren Bent, I think, has to be questioned given his form and in the meantime, but I do think that the striking question is one that could have issues for it. They don't have the distraction, if you want to call it that, of the Champions League this season, and how much they put into the Europa League. I think I don't think Harry Redknapp did they make the Europa League? They did. Yeah. So I don't think he was too keen on the idea, but I think Liverpool. I think probably. Yeah, fourth spot. I think will be interesting. I think it'll probably be Liverpool. I think Arsenal. They could. I think it would be a fantastic result for them if they did get fourth spot. I mean, I know that's some way short of where their fans want to be, but given all that's gone on, I think it would be a pretty good achievement. So I think Liverpool, Arsenal in the fifth, and then maybe Spurs in the sixth. I don't know. Do you see anyone else in the chase and pack challenge for that sixth spot?
I don't, not over the course of the season, really, no. I very much doubt it, just even in terms of, I think it's decided on financial clout these days. I mean, the higher than the table you finish, I mean, gone are the days of provincial clubs, if you will, finishing. I mean, Everton, I think, given their lack of transfer activity for, I think it must be the second, third year in a row, I mean, obviously the money isn't there at Everton. Despite the fact David Moyes is a very, very fine manager, and they do have a core of quite good players, a very solid team with a bit of flair. Arteta, when he's fit, Cahill, very, very effective. Losing James Coleman's a huge blow to them. He was an excellent player last year for them. Hopefully won't be there for too long. I think Everton will be probably one of the teams that will finish, you know, outside of the top six, you know, just outside. They're, as I say, they have the solidity and the experience, but I just don't see anyone really challenging the established order at the top beyond what we've seen over the last two seasons, say.
Yeah, I think the lack of activity at Everton is a concern for their fans, but I think 1-11, they're a good team. The big thing for them is avoiding injury. I think to some of their key players, like Arteta, has missed significant time. Cahill missed some time last season. Saha always misses time. Mm-hmm. I was amazed to see him playing in Van der Sar's testimonial there recently, given his importance to them. But, you know, rumours this morning that they're looking at taking Danny Sturridge, although which would be a great move for them. I don't know, certainly support from a Chelsea point of view, but we shall see. Mm-hmm. Aston Villa, you know, I think Darren Bent was a great move last January, and big money spent, and then they go and sell two of their more creative wide players in Young and Downing. But I think Zogbia will be a good signing, and Mark Albright can probably step up there. So whether they make any more signings, McLeish for two relegations from the Premier League.
An interesting choice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, and you can be sure the fans won't give him much time given his previous club. My own I suppose, pick for who could be a surprise is Stoke City, who finished last season kind of on a down note, but, you know, in Woodgate and Upson, they've signed two potentially good centre-halves, not that they were weak at centre-half necessarily, and they, you know, they have good home form, well organised, you know, they appear to have money, they're being linked with players like Bent or Crouch, so they seem to be not afraid to spend, so that could be the difference between themselves, Everton and Villa, challenging for, say, a sixth or a seventh spot.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, I think you know, like Stoke or Lothian, and Tony Pulis is not a particularly easy man to like, I think. But
you don't like, why, because he's got a funny accent? Or what's wrong with Tony Pulis?
Huh?
What's wrong with Tony Pulis?
Oh, he's just full of us. God on
right.
Everyone's against him. Everyone's against him all the time. It's like a hurling manager talking about the media. But, you know, it's to his great credit and to Stoke's great credit that, you know, no one would expect them to be in any trouble anymore. They're an established fixture in the Premier League now. And as you say, they continue to strengthen really season on season, kind of advancing up the table, you know, incrementally versus, you know, could you argue, but they're very strong, very organised. Again, at home, they're a very, very difficult team to beat. They will definitely be strong again this season, and then I think pushing for European place, Europa League, wouldn't be beyond them at all.
Yeah, of course, they find themselves in this season's Europa League by virtue of being runners-up in the FA Cup last season. How they deal with the demands of that competition will be interesting. And they're starting, I think, at the playoff stage, so it could be a long season in that competition for them if they put any effort into it. But, you know, I think in Europe especially, their home form would be an advantage, especially if they're playing on a wet Tuesday night, because what European player would want to play there in them sort of conditions. If we maybe look at the other end of the table, because, like, it's basically who cares who finishes from 11th to 17th, do you think Wigan will be okay?
I certainly think they're not going to enjoy a comfortable season by any stretch of the imagination, but I think like last season, they'll certainly be in the relegation mix for most, if not all, the season. But I just think Wigan have that bit of experience that they can avoid the drop. I mean, losing in Zogbia and Cleverly, I think, was there last year, two big blows to Wigan, all right. I think Martinez is a very good manager. I think players like McCarthy, say, in midfield, look good. Roddy Ego up front will get you a few goals. And basically, I think the main reason why I think Wigan will survive is I think there are three teams worse than Wigan in the league, which is all you need, basically, if you're talking about staving off relegation. I think the three promoted teams, I don't think there's ever been as big a gap between the three teams that have come up and the teams that are in the league already. You know, obviously, Swansea and Norwich are very, very small clubs, you know, no real activity in the transfer market in terms of big signings, a few decent signings, yeah. QPR, there seems to be all kinds of strangeness going on there, but QPR are one of the richest clubs in the world, apparently, given Vittorio Eccleston and whoever else is involved in owning them. They've signed nobody, and, you know, there seems to be serious issues, you know, in the background there, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the three teams that pump this year be the three bottom teams in the league come the end of May.
Yeah, I suppose QPR, when we say they've signed nobody, I suppose, to be fair, Kieran Dyer, Jay Bothroyd, Danny Gabaldon, all three, which is probably
Kieran Dyer. I think somebody should have paid them to take Kieran Dyer, to be honest, like, you know. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it'll be interesting. I was surprised. I thought there would be more investment in QPR, given that they got into the Premier League. But you'd imagine these rich guys who took them over, that's kind of where they wanted to be. But as I say, obviously there's some fun going on behind the scenes there, I would have thought.
Yeah, I really wonder about QPR. I agree with you on Swansea. I think QPR and Swansea certainly will go down. I think Norwich could be the surprise. I think kind of passionate home support, they've got a good manager, they're a pretty well run club, they were comfortable enough in gaining promotion last season, and we're right there till the end with QPR for the number one spot, despite having much less money. Other than that, I think Wigan stayed up last season. They had better players by and large, and they stayed up by virtue of a last day win at Stoke when Stoke literally had nothing to play for. So I think they will struggle. The other teams I would be wary of are Blackburn and indeed, well, maybe not Newcastle. I'll confess that, okay, Newcastle look like they're improving given what's going on with Joey Barton, the fact they sold Enrique, Andy Carroll was sold for $35 million, and very little of that has been reinvested. But I mean, they got Demba Ba on a free transfer, who could be good. I will admit, though, I know very little about the French guys they've signed, but they again could be decent. So I mean, I think they you know, maybe I'm being a bit unfair on them, but I think Blackburn though are a team really that could struggle again, like QPR. You know, big name or well, not big name, but you know, allegedly big money investors. I mean, there was rumored last year about Kaká and so on, and they've ended up signing David Goodmoney. This summer is their number one signing. So you know, I don't know what's going on there. I think if we're looking for managers to get the sack, I think Steve Keane and probably Neil Warnock are my two favourites to be gone before Christmas. So I think it'll be QPR, Swansea, and one from either Wigan or Blackburn. I think Norwich will just avoid it. Wolves, I think, have bought pretty well. You know, Jamie O'Hara, Roger Johnson look like good signings. I mean, I think one thing to be, you know, wary of is there's a clamour to sign Birmingham City players. And yet they were part of the team that was running last season. We have Dan is in demand, Roger Johnson, both the Wolves, Sunderland have picked up two Birmingham City midfield. So it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Certainly, some strange, there is such a clamour for their players. Although they always had a reputation for solidity at the back, which I think given they conceded a lot of goals was a strange one. But yeah, I don't know. Norwich, I've heard a lot of people think that Norwich will do really okay in the sense that they'll stay up. It would be quite the story if they did. I mean, two consecutive promotions. I think famously they started the 2009-10 season by losing 7-0 to Colchester of all teams. So to think that a team that within 2 years ago was doing that could survive in the Premier League would be a huge achievement. Paul Lambert is obviously a very good manager, but seeing a good young manager, I think there's talk that even if any of the managers at bigger Premier League teams would lose their job during the season, that he would be much sought after to replace them. But yeah, I mean, Norwich play a pretty attractive brand of football. It would be nice to see them do well. I just think they might be this season's Blackpool, and that, you know, they'll certainly give it a good go. You know, they won't play negative football, and will be good to watch. We'll give their fans some good times, especially at home. Will be quite formidable. But I just wonder if they have the quality and the experience. You say Wigan, yeah, and Wigan obviously are going to be perennial relegation candidates. But I think at this stage, this is Wigan's fifth year in the Premier League. I'm not sure. They've always been there, thereabouts for relegation. They've always managed to stave it off. And I think that really counts for an awful lot in relegation scraps against certainly promoted teams who kind of lack that experience. But yeah, I guess that's all remains to be seen.
Right, so, okay, I think we have our top three, United, City, Chelsea, in that order?
Yeah, I think City, Chelsea could be. I would. It depends, really, but I would still, if I was put money on Chelsea for a second, I think.
Okay, and then I think you think that the three promoted teams will go straight down. Just so you have pretty researched this whole podcast is, I have no idea where that has ever happened before in a season in the Premier League. I'm going to look up maybe. I think two from three, and then one other from Blackburn or Wigan. Give me a surprise for the season.
Surprise for the season? I really don't know. I really don't know. I think Fulham could actually do better than some people are saying. I think Fulham allowed the Redon Vision for bang on the table. I think they might be a bit stronger than that, and I think I can see Fulham pushing for a European spot at the later stages of the season, maybe. I think Yall is a good manager. They have a decent squad, a few good players, Dempsey and the like, and I think they could do okay for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm struggling with any surprises myself. I guess given the volume of signings, I think Sunderland could surprise one way or another. They could quite feel a new starting 11. Why not Sunderland for Europa League spot? Right, well, given it's 50 minutes in, I think we might wrap it up for now. If we look at the opening day fixtures, anything catching your eye?
I don't think so. I think Arsenal-Newcastle is really the one to watch, given the transfer saga at Arsenal, Joey Barton saga at Newcastle. It's a big game for both teams, but particularly for Arsenal. I think if Arsenal lose that, the calls for Wenger to step aside will go very loud indeed. So I think that's really the interesting game of the weekend.
Of course, we had a game last season finished 4-4 after Arsenal leading 4-0. Any repeat of that would be interesting. I don't know if there'll be win, lose, or draw. That game will really go any way to defining where Wenger's going. I think the Champions League tie against Udinese will be a high watermark for the season. I think Stoke versus Chelsea tomorrow will be very interesting to see. Will Andre Villas-Boas make the difference over Carlo Ancelotti in the short term? And Chelsea could be somewhat short-handed in missing one or two players. So whether they can repeat their remarkably successful opening day form of the past 7 or 8 seasons will be interesting. I think 3 o'clock game today on Setanta, Liverpool, Sunderland, both teams could feature a lot of new players and expectations pretty high on both sides. So that would be an interesting one. Yeah. But anyway, we'll wrap it up for today. When the next podcast will be, I don't know. It could be football of a different kind the next time for the Ulster Bank's 16th man. Is that a competition or?
I think it's just a fan website thing. You know,
right, okay.
Feature something.
So look out for Down playing Donegal's chances against Dublin next time out. But thanks for listening. If you have listened, and we welcome all comments. You can follow both of us on Twitter at Kieran McMonagall and at Owen McMonagall. I would say follow the Guff Report, but I tend to use that just for following the inane twitterings of the likes of Joey Barton and Rio Ferdinand. I don't tend to do much tweeting from it. So, anyway, until the next time, it's goodbye from me.
And all the rest from me.
Okay.